don't want to change for the sake of change. I think if you do that, then you know, you're bouncing all over the place. Take your ego and put it away to the side and be able to change. And especially in today's game where, you know, we're coaching kids that have so much access to information. If you're not ready to coach these guys, you're going to get exposed. And so I just think you got to be willing to change and adapt if there's a better way. There's nothing wrong with having a dream or a goal or a destination in that telescope. But if you're not focused on the microscope and what you're doing right now in that day, then you're not going to get better at your craft. You're not going to become a better coach. You're not going to learn. And you're going to completely cheat the young man that you're coaching because they're going to know that you don't really want to be there.
You're dialed in to the ABCA's Calls from the Clubhouse podcast, connecting our coaches with some of the best baseball minds in our game. Now here's your host, Jeremy Schiedinger.
Broadcasting from the ABCA National Office here in Greensboro, North Carolina, welcome back to our show and thank you for joining in on the conversation. Staying dialed into this podcast and connecting with our A++ guest in their content is a decision that you're making each and every week, and it's one that's motivated by personal growth. You want more for you, for your players, and for your programs, and we truly appreciate that, guys. Together, we are positively changing the culture of coaching one podcast at a time, and we love that each of you are on board with us, so thank you for that. And if personal growth is your motivation, we expect you've already joined the American Baseball Coaches Association to become part of your baseball coaches fraternity. And if so, you now have access to the personal growth event of the year for baseball coaches around the world, our annual ABCA convention. And this January, we're heading out to Indianapolis. 4 days of baseball heaven are waiting for us. It's a 100%, no doubter, no-brainer, can't-miss opportunity for coaches out there across every single level of baseball. You're talking about clinics and hot stoves are everywhere. 25 main stage clinics, 20 more inside our expo theater. Our hitting and pitching hot stove events are on Saturday. Plus, we're adding an infield, an outfield, a catching, and a base-running hot stove into the mix that night as well. It's the world's largest baseball trade show. Over 300 exhibitors are going to be there. Every single baseball company, product, bat, glove, uniform, and hat makers, plus so many other great companies that are just ready to meet you. Connect with the legends of our game at our Hall of Fame banquet, our honors luncheon. Plus, throughout the hotel and convention center, you can connect with over 6,000 of your coaching peers. I mean, is it January yet or what? I stay 10 shades of fired up for this January in Indianapolis, and we just want to make sure you're making plans to join us there as well. If you want more information on all that stuff, it'll be at the end of the show. And again, we hope to see you out at convention. Now, if you are part of the tens of thousands of loyal listeners out there to our shows, you already know about Dugout Chatter episodes and its mission on the airwaves. But if you're listening in as a first-timer, just know we use these shows to shine a positive light on the tremendous baseball men inside the ABCA and reflect on their path in baseball, plus their takeaways from years in the dugout. We also dabble in some special interest topics and stories that are out there we want to share with you guys, and we even connect with legends inside our game in our extra innings episodes and deliver some real perspective from the winningest coaches in history. But today's show is an example, once again, of the terrific coaches out there in our game. They keep development and relationships at the forefront of their why in coaching, and we welcome loyal ABCA member Penn State University head coach Rob Cooper to the dugout to talk through his career in coaching and what keeps his motor running. A West Coast guy who has an impressive lineage in baseball, playing for the legendary ABCA Hall of Famer Jerry Weinstein, who moved Coop into coaching, and he has been rolling ever since. 25 years in the game, 4 times he's been selected to coach with USA Baseball. He redefined the Wright State baseball program as head coach and is now rebuilding the Nittany Lions program there at Penn State. And we get Coach Cooper to open up on his path in coaching, the invaluable lessons he learned that have helped transform him into a tremendous teacher, but more importantly, a coach that is motivated by loving his players and measures his success on relationships and helping players get their degree, a man that is out there preparing his players for life. Truly awesome insight is waiting for all of us on the other end of this call, so let's dive in head first. Let's welcome Rob Cooper, head coach at Penn State University, and let's connect with Coop on today's Dugout Chatter episode. Get ready, coaches, because this great show is coming at you right now. Coaches, thanks for clicking into today's show. And once again, connecting with tremendous baseball men out in our community. And inside our Dugout Chatter episodes, we get to shine a positive light on these guys. And we've got a great one in store for you today. A lot of great takeaways are going to be inside this interview as we connect with Penn State University head coach, Rob Cooper. Coop, thanks for being on the call with us today.
Hey, I appreciate you having me on. Love what you guys are doing and happy to be here.
Awesome. Well, we want to start, again, as we highlight guys. You're 25 years in the game, but a guy that's been very entrenched in the ABCA and part of the coaching fraternity here and what we do. If you could, Coop, can you open up just your experience being part of ABCA, your convention attendance, and just all the great things that are wrapped up inside being part of our brotherhood?
Yeah, you know, for me, my first ABCA convention was I was in junior college. I was probably a freshman in junior college, playing at Sacramento City College. Yep. And, you know, I knew I wanted to be a coach, and Jerry Weinstein, my head coach, you know, told me about the ABCA. And I can remember him. I remember going with Andy McKay, who's now the director of player development for the Mariners. We were teammates, and we went, and, you know, I'm walking around the lobby, and it was in Nashville. I remember the first convention I ever went to was in Nashville, and you're walking around the lobby and you're just seeing, you know, I was in awe. Like, it was, you're walking around giants of the game that have built college baseball, whether it was Rod Dedeaux, Ron Frazier, John Winken, you know, all these greats in the game, and just their, you know, being able to pick their brain and listen to all the different speakers and just be around that and learn. It was something that just, I remember, it was like Christmas. It was like, waiting for that every year.
Sure. It is the perfect opportunity to recharge your batteries. And I know that's one thing that a lot of coaches give us the feedback on, the timing of it. I mean, we've looked at doing a lot of different things inside ABCA and that convention, but it's nooked in just a great spot post-holiday, pre-season workout to where guys can recharge their batteries. Do you find that to be the same way?
Yeah, you know, the thing I think it does for me is, you know, I think obviously you put the, you know, you really get after it in the summer in recruiting, you really get after it in the fall with your team, and then you know, winter break comes up and you kind of put the fall to bed and you're not recruiting, so you've got a little downtime that you can recharge with the family. But what I think it does for me is, you know, I think everybody's anxious to get the season going and nobody knows exactly what their team's going to be like, and I think what it does for me is being able to talk to some different coaches about what they had in the fall or what they've experienced or what they're seeing. You know, it really kind of helps reaffirm what we're doing and what I feel like I'm doing, and you know, kind of as we get, you know, as the first of the year rolls around and we go to the convention, then we come back and, you know, you're kind of, you're really feeling energized because everybody's on a clean slate and you've kind of been reaffirmed by other coaches that you respect of what you're doing.
As we get into this interview, there's so much, Coop, I want to dive into, but I think where we have to start is you got to give your listeners a platform to build upon. They've got to know who you are and where you've come from. So if you could walk through your career path and all the stops that you've had along the way in baseball.
Well, you know, I was very fortunate. You know, I grew up in Sacramento, California, and I was very, you know, lucky that right in our backyard was, you know, a head coach like Jerry Weinstein and a program like Sacramento City College. And so, you know, I went there to play and, you know, I tell people all the time, because it was the truth, I wasn't a very good player. I mean, you know, most people go to junior college so that they don't have to redshirt a year or not play a lot their first couple of years. I went to junior college because, you know, I wasn't a good enough player and I redshirted there. and so, you know, I was very fortunate. I had a great coach like Jerry Weinstein who, you know, really helped me learn the game and motivated me and pushed me to be a student of the game. And from there, I went to the University of Miami, and I really went there to be kind of a student coach. And, you know, I actually did play a little bit, but not very much. I went there to be a student coach. And so I did that. And then when I graduated from Miami, I was kind of there. It wasn't a GA spot, kind of more of a student manager. So I could still learn more of the operations part of the job and everything. And then I got an opportunity to go be an assistant coach at Wake Forest. And I was at Wake Forest for 1 year, but at the, you know, it was a chance for me to be on the field coaching and out recruiting. At the time, I was the number two assistant, but at the time that position didn't pay anything. So, you know, I wanted the opportunity to be in the ACC. I wanted the opportunity to coach and experience something different, and was there for 1 year and got hired by Rick Jones at Tulane. And coached at Tulane for 2 years and really learned a lot about, got a chance to be the hitting coach and really helped Jim Schlossnagel with the recruiting. And Rick Jones taught me a lot about how to run a program and how to, you know, fundraise and different things like that. And then, you know, my mom got sick and so I was offered a chance to go back home and coach at Sac City and took that job and I was there in Sacramento for 5 years, and thank God that my mom's health had improved. And I was lucky enough that Rob Walton became the head coach at Oral Roberts University and hired me, and I was his recruiting coordinator and, you know, had a great year there. And I wasn't even looking to leave. I was actually very happy there, very extremely loyal to Rob for giving me a chance to get back in at the Division I level. And then, the Wright State job opened up and, you know, it was kind of a roundabout situation. Next thing you know, I'm offered the job and, you know, to this day, this is one of the things that makes Rob Walton so great as a human being and a coach is, you know, when I told him, I said, you know, Rob, I can't leave you. I've only been here, you know, 10 months and whatever it was. And he's like, hey man, if you think this is a good job and you can win there, it's a head coaching job, you need to take it. And,
right.
You know, he totally took any stress out of my mind of whether or not it was a good move. And so I spent 9 awesome years, my family and I did, in Dayton, Ohio at Wright State, and coached some great kids, coached with some great people. And then, you know, was lucky enough to be named the head coach at Penn State. And year 5 here, and, you know, still trying to get this thing going where we need to. But, you know, it's a great place with great people and a great university. So I've been very, very blessed as a coach and coaching in this game. And, you know, it's allowed me to coach with Team USA. It's allowed me to do some neat things because of the game of baseball.
That's it. And we're going to come back to Penn State because there's definitely some really cool things going on there. But let's go back, because your lineage, I mean, when you connect somebody with Jerry Weinstein and what he's been able to do in the game, and just how much of a mentor that man's been. You and I have talked about the story about coming to Miami, but go back to Sac City. How special of a place is Sac City for baseball guys that have come through there and have put down roots inside that program? Talk about the program, but also just that decision, spending time under such a great baseball man with Jerry.
Well, you know, again, I was lucky. I mean, it was in my backyard, and I remember, you know, my dad would take me over to games. I would go to their baseball camps, and I just – their guys, their players were like, they were idols to me. They were heroes to me. And, you know, I just the way they would sprint on and off the field. I mean, it was best speed, that you had to sprint from the dugout to your position, and you'd sprint off the field back to your, you know, to the dugout. And the way they wore their socks up, everybody wore their socks up, and, you know, they all, the way they played, how hard they played. I was hooked.
Sure.
And, you know, the guys that have played there, whether it's been Jeff Blauser, Greg Vaughn, F.P. Santangelo, Chris Bosio, you know, just some of the best that have played in college and in the big leagues, you know, they got their start there. And Jerry, you know, is one of the smartest baseball men I've ever met. But the thing about Jerry that most people don't understand, everybody talks about what a great baseball coach he really is, but he's driven, he's a hardworking person, but, you know, he cares about people who work hard too. And, you know, my situation was different than a lot of players. You know, I wasn't a very good player. I went to Sac City. I remember about a month or so into the fall as a freshman there, you know, Jerry had individual meetings with each guy, just kind of, hey, this is where you're at. And I remember him saying, Coop, we love you. You work hard. You're a great kid. But, you know, if the season started today, you wouldn't play an inning.
Right.
And he was right. But the great thing about Jerry is he would never cut you. Like, if you were willing to work hard and you were willing to put in the time and the energy, he wanted you to be a part of the team. And so, you know, for me, it was – even though I was in junior college, it was like a doctorate program on the game of baseball. And between Jerry Weinstein and Paul Carmazzi, who was the associate head coach, and, you know, those two are two of the most influential men in my life, you know. And so, you know, like, my dad died when I was a freshman in high school. And so time period of my life where I'm trying to learn what it means to be a man and everything, you know, my male mentors were coaches and teachers. And I was very fortunate that I had a great high school coach in Frank Calcano at El Camino High School. I had great teachers. But Jerry Weinstein and Paul Carmazzi, I mean, they opened up the door to the world of baseball. And they didn't have to do it because, again, I wasn't a good player. If Jerry Weinstein had just looked at me as, hey, this kid never plays, or, you know, this kid over here hits 400 and he helps us win in that regard – then he would have never taken an interest in me. But what he did was, is, you know, he knew I wanted to be a coach. He knew how hard I worked. And so, you know, Jerry had coached at the University of Miami and had sent a lot of players there. And he picked up the phone and called those guys and said, "Hey, I got a guy that I want to send there. And he will be a great coach someday. And he needs to be in a program like that." And they agreed. And so one day I'm at practice and I was all set. I was going to go to like Providence College. My dad was from the East Coast. My family's back there. I'm a huge Red Sox fan. I've been going to New England my whole life. And so I was going to go to Providence College or Northeastern to play baseball and get a degree. And one day at practice, Jerry said, "Come see me after practice." And so I walk in and he's like, "Hey, what would you think about going to the University of Miami?" And I turned around because I thought he was talking to somebody else. I thought another player had walked in.
Right.
That, you know, and he goes, "No, you." And I said, "Well, yeah, that'd be awesome." But he's like, "Listen, you know, you want to be a coach." This, and he went through the whole thing, why it was a good investment. You know, yeah, I could get scholarship money at the other place, but this would be a good investment in your future. And you know, he was right. And again, I just point back to the fact that I think so many coaches just look at guys as what they can get out of them as players. And in today's college baseball, that opportunity I got, luckily I had a guy like Jerry who cared about me as a human being, but you know, now we're limited to 35 man rosters. We're limited to, you know, how many guys you can have on the team that are not on scholarship and all that kind of stuff. And in today's Division I college baseball transfer opportunities, there's no chance a program like the University of Miami would take me with a 35 man roster. So I was very, very fortunate that, again, I had a guy like Jerry Weinstein, Paul Carmazzi that cared about me, and then people at Miami that were willing to take a chance on me.
That's awesome. Thank you for unraveling that for our coach. I think it definitely gives them a place to view your perspective coming into coaching. Now, what I love is when I met you at Wright State, and obviously watching you build that program and played you guys when we were at Kentucky, and I just, when I look at that program and I look at you as a young head coach and trying to figure things out, there is certainly, getting to Penn State, there's so many lessons that are learned inside 9 years, and then now walking into another program that I think, could you look back at your first few years as a head coach and go, "Man, those are some silly things I did," or there's things that you learned that certainly prepared you for this next stop?
Yeah, you know, definitely. I mean, look, I think every year there's stuff as head coaches that if you're really, you know, if you take your ego and you put it to the side and you sit there and go, you know, why did I do that?
That's
like,
right.
we could have been, you know, I think the first thing as a coach, you got to sit there and be honest with yourself and go, look, I'm never going to be perfect at this. And, you know, I got to be willing to be introspective and look at what things that I can do better. But sure, I look at stuff, you know, at Wright State that, you know, I was a young, determined guy that wanted to prove he could be a head coach. And, you know, I'd like to think now that I listen better, I you know, communicate better. And again, I think one of the biggest things that I have found in my coaching journey is when you're a young coach, you know, when I first got my first coaching job at Wake Forest, man, I was so naive and dumb that I was like, you know what? I played at Sac City. Just give me players to work with. I'll make them better. I'll teach them the game.
That's
I'll fix everybody's swing. I'll make them great infielders. And don't get me wrong, I think that's a huge part of the game, is being able to coach guys physically and coach their mechanics and coach them on the field. But the truth of the matter is at the end of the day, what it's all about is the relationships, and it's getting those guys to understand that you truly care about them as people and connecting with them. Because, you know, at the end of every year, when you sit there and you take inventory with coaches of the season and you go, okay, why were we successful this year? Usually the reasons you come up with were, hey, the guys really bought in. They were on the same page. They competed. They played hard. They cared. You don't ever sit there and go, you know what? Like, we did that one drill, that offensive drill, over and over again. We took way more ground balls this year than we did the year before. Again, those things are important. And then at the end, you know, if you have a bad year, you never sit there and go, well, you know what? The reason why we didn't do well was because we didn't take enough ground balls, or we didn't work on our pick move enough. You know, every little bit helps, but the truth is, you sit there and you go, well, we didn't have a good year this year because we didn't get on the same page. We didn't compete. We didn't play hard. We weren't together. There wasn't a good culture. So to me, it's more about the person, and it's more about that relationship than it is about just developing them as baseball players. In fact, when I recruit guys, And I tell our players this all the time. And when I say this stuff, I want to make sure, you know, I'm clear on this. Like, there are so many better coaches out there than me. And I'm very fortunate that the guys I get to coach trust myself and our staff and my family with their futures. You know, when you sit there and you look at this, like, it's not about making a guy a great player. And so, I mean, that's big. But the biggest thing is when they leave, are they better people? Are they better men? And I tell our guys all the time, I have zero interest in just coaching you on the baseball field. I want to coach you, you know, in any way that I possibly can make you better.
And I love that. And that leads right into what you're doing there at Penn State, Coop. And I think if you could, I certainly want you to give, what's the recruiting pitch sound like? Because there's so many great things that are offered there at Penn State. But I think what jumps off the page to me from an outsider is, when you look at the way that you've gone about rebuilding this program, you have not shied away from playing the bigger schools. In fact, you know, I know you're going to go into this, just that's going to be your approach, is get those guys in those environments so they see what the big stage looks like, prepare them for the postseason. But more importantly, you're really into developing the student-athlete, which you just touched on, and you want to open that up for our guys. Talk about Penn State, but talk about your approach inside leading the Nittany Lions.
Well, you know, one of the things, this is something that I definitely took away. I've always been, and again, I go back to Sac City, I go back to the University of Miami, you know, being at programs that love the challenge, that weren't afraid to play everyone, anyone and everyone. And I'm a firm believer that the only way you get better is by putting yourself in really uncomfortable, competitive environment, you know, and if you do that, you know, and I think you also got to completely redefine how you view failure. And so if we go up and we play, you know, like a couple years ago, TCU came up here and we played them, and we played them, you know, three games and they swept us. But you know what? That was a team that perennial World Series team. And it's a place, it's a kind of program we want to strive to be. And so we're in that game and it shows you so many things. So if you're on the outside, you sit there and you go, oh, well, they failed. They lost. They didn't win a game. But if you redefine failure and go, okay, here's where they're at. Here's where we're at. Here's what we need to do in order to be at that level. What you're doing is you're actually learning and you're finding out what you can do so that you can get better. And it's that way in life. Like your biggest failures, the more you can put yourself in tough, competitive, uncomfortable environments, then you're going to learn and you're going to get better. And so the thing I try to get our kids to do is I try to say to them, hey, look, like, redefine failure, because if it's a matter of, hey, you're going to go do this thing and you're going to get it done and you're going to get the satisfaction of accomplishing it, and then you have to, you know, and then you have to move on and prove yourself again and again, or you're going to fail. And if you fail, you're going to learn. So why either side isn't a bad thing. And I just think that we get so wrapped up in the outcome, in the failure part of it, that we lose the learning message that we can do. And look, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I'm perfect at that, because definitely I take losses, mm-hmm. you know, hard and everything, but it's something I strive to work on and get better at. So here at Penn State, you know, I was just like, look, we got to play great people. You know, we got to go down to TCU, which we have. We've got to go to South Carolina, which we have. We're going to Santa Barbara this year. We're going, you know, Arizona's going to come here next year. We're going, you know, I mean, you've got to play teams. If our goal eventually is to play in the NCAA tournament, those are the type of teams you're going to play. And the Big Ten now is a real Division I college baseball league and conference, and last year five teams made it. So it's not just, hey, I want to get us ready to hopefully play in the postseason. I want to get us ready so we can play in conference, because it's a real good conference. So that's been my philosophy all along, is that you have to play good people in order to improve your game. And then as far as the recruiting pitch here at Penn State, you're talking about, it's a world-class degree. It's a degree that can change your life and can, you know, it's a top 35 university in this country. It's a top 10 public university. So our kids are coming here and they're going to get a world-class degree. It was ranked the number one most influential alumni group in the entire country. So when our guys get ready to interview for jobs, they jump to the front of the line. You know, so when you're sitting in front of parents and kids and you're sitting there telling them, look, by coming to Penn State, we're going to put you in a position where you're going to be able to get a job in your field And Penn State degree is going to have real weight and merit when you go do that. So that, I think that's a huge piece. I think the other part is, you know, we're in a part of the country where there's really good players. You know, a lot of people don't realize this, but California is the number one producer of major league alums by state, and Pennsylvania is number two. And so, you know, you're talking about really good players in this area. You're talking about the mid-Atlantic states, up the New England seaboard, into the New England area, Jersey, Maryland, all that different states. And then because of our name and our degree, you know, we can go to California and get a player. We can go to Florida and get a player. And so, you know, we've got a great recruiting base. But when you talk about the education, and then now, you know, I'd say probably, 25 years ago, if you wanted to be the best player you could be, you had to go south or west or somewhere where the climate was warm, so that in January and February, when those northern schools are inside in a gym or in a batting cage, you know, you're outside actually inter-squatting and getting reps and things like that. Well, first we played in a minor league ballpark on our campus that the university owns. So we have a state-of-the-art elite facility. And then in January and February, our indoor football facility is large enough and big enough that we can play actual inter squads in there. So if I picked up Penn State University and moved it to Orlando, Florida in January and February, we would do the exact same thing down there that we do here. The exact same thing. We play 10 innings and guys pitch and they got to cover first and they got to pick guys off and guys got to figure out pitchers. And so the development opportunities that weren't there in the past are now here. So now, a young man who really wants to get a world-class education and really loves a Penn State degree doesn't have to sacrifice becoming the best baseball player he can be because of the development opportunities we have. And then, you know, again, you throw in the fact that the Big Ten Conference now is a multi-bid league that allows you to really compete at the highest level. And so I think you get the best of both worlds. And then, you know, the third part about it here is that the student experience that our students get, you know, I think they get a combination of three things that are just unbelievable. So that's why I think Penn State's a special place, and that's what we try to really impress on our kids that we're recruiting.
So many different stops, and you've worked with throwing out Hall of Famer type guys that you've spent time with in the dugout. So I think if you look back at your coaching career, Coop, and you go back to the first few years at Miami, to obviously work your way up through Wake Forest and Tulane and Oral Roberts, and you look back at that young Rob Cooper, what are some of the lessons that you needed to learn early that maybe you look back and it kind of makes you chuckle of where you were, but some of the lessons learned along the way that you'd offer?
Yeah, you know, I think the biggest thing for me would be just to go back and kind of slap myself over the head of just being really naive as to, hey, just being the smartest baseball guy is going to make you the best coach.
Right.
And, you know, obviously you need to be proficient in the game and things like that. But, you know, it's the thing I tell a lot of young coaches is this, is that, so when I was the hitting coach at places, I feel like one of the reasons why we really swung the bat well wasn't because I just really knew hitting. It was because those guys knew I trusted them and I believed in them. And there was a true connection there, and that, you know, they would buy into, they bought into me because I bought into them. And then it just so happened they were good players. And so, so that same thing that you're trying to do as an assistant, really connect with your position, with your guys, that's what you got to do as a head coach. And so I would say that's be the biggest thing is that, you know, yeah, go to clinics and find out new techniques and new mechanics and everything, but pick up books on leadership, pick up books on how people deal with people, pick up books on failure, you know, like read things to make you on how to connect with people and understand that every player you coach isn't like you, you know, like I was a kid that had to go to junior college, that wasn't a good player, that, you know, started one game in 3 years in junior college. So I was a bench guy, but I also worked hard and I played hard. And so when I see some, like, I struggle with guys who don't play hard. I struggle with guys who make the choice not to compete.
That's right.
But I also have to understand where different guys come from. And so my messaging on how to get them where I need to get them has to be better than just, you know, getting mad and upset, because that's not how I would have done it. And then, you know, I think the other thing that, you know, you have to be willing to do is you have to be willing to, I mean, you don't want to change for the sake of change. I think if you do that, then, you know, you're bouncing all over the place, but you have to be willing to evolve. I think one of the best examples that I can give you of myself is, You know, I feel like I kind of made my name as an assistant coach moving up in this game as a hitting coach. You know, our offensive teams were very good and had good success. And so, you know, I've always had a reputation for developing hitters. Well, you know, within the last year, I've completely changed how I teach hitting. And it all came about from a high school coach in the Pennsylvania area that sent me a letter wanting to get my thoughts on hitting and share his thoughts on hitting. And I didn't understand it at first. I really didn't. It was, you know, I'm a baseball coach for a reason. He was using a lot of big words.
Yeah,
and so I didn't really understand it. And I didn't take the time to really research it at the time, but you know, I kind of, for some reason, the letter kind of stuck with me and got to know this guy and started trying to talk to him about it. And I still couldn't understand it. I still couldn't conceptualize it. And so I decided, you know what, I've got a son that's a junior in high school right now. I got a son that's a freshman in high school right now. And so, you know, I was like, I said, I tell you what, let me bring him down. You can work with them. Let me watch. And so I did. And it started to kind of make some sense. I'm like, okay, based on how he's talking about it, based on the science of it, I think there's something to this, but I still don't feel good enough about it to teach it because I don't understand enough. Well, finally, I just said, you know what, I said, I'm going to bring my boys down. You can work with them once a week, and I just want to watch, you know. And so we were doing that, and I was starting to pick it up a little bit. To be honest with you, my boys were picking it up a lot faster than me. So anyway, there was a time where I couldn't take my oldest son down to, you know, down to hit. So my wife took him down, and, you know, after the lesson, later that day, I texted the coach, and I was like, hey, I said, how'd it go today? How'd he do? And he sent me video, and I didn't think it was my son. Like the swing was, it was really, I mean, it was the way it should look. It was really advanced. It was, the ball's jumping off his bat. It's got some violence to it. And it just hit me like, yeah, it's better. That's a better way. And so that I really, really was able to dive in and understand it more and slow it down. And so I share that story with you because I think you have to be able to take your ego and put it away to the side and be able to change. And especially in today's game where, you know, we're coaching kids that have so much access to information and at their fingertips, they can pull it up on their phone and they can find information. So if you're not ready to coach these guys, you're going to get exposed. Mm-hmm. And so I just think you got to be willing to change and adapt if there's a better way.
Love that. And you mentioned the word evolve, and I think that walks right into the spider web of this next question, because I think it's always interesting to get a guy in our conversations. I know you're a lifelong learner. You've committed to that. I think you're a guy that constantly challenges where he's at and evaluates where he's at and looks to make adjustments and, again, evolve. If you could, open up for our listeners, Coop, what are the things you're doing, books or podcasts, or how are you still challenging yourself as a coach each day?
Yeah, you know, one thing that's a perk of this job at Penn State is we have 31 sports here, and I have a chance to watch world-class coaches. I mean, when you are in coaches meetings with Cale Sanderson, and the national, you know, 5-time national championship wrestling team, Russ Rose, our coach, who's won, I think, 6 national titles, our women's soccer coach, Erica Dombach, won a national title. You're around Guy Gadowski, James Franklin, you know, all these coaches where you can pick their brains on different things and understand how they do things. And they're so giving and so supportive. I think that's a big thing. I love watching documentaries on leaders. I love watching documentaries on successful organizations, not just sports teams. I'm a big reader. I love to read. You know, my dad was a military history professor at the Air Force Academy. So I love, you know, military and military history. And so, you know, podcasts, you know, different things I follow different things on Twitter for the information and to read it. And, you know, I think another thing to just kind of keep in mind is, you know, I'll give you a perfect example. Like, so the other day I'm on Twitter and I see this interview with Tim Corbin, and I think, you know, I never coached with Tim Corbin, but I think Tim Corbin is, he's the kind of guy I would have no doubt let my sons play for.
Sure.
I think he's a great man in this profession, great coach, but a better person. And so, you know, I'm watching him with this interview and I'm like, oh man, like, why am I not doing that? And then finally I had to stop myself and go, look, I can't, like, I have to be me. You have to be yourself.
That's right.
And yeah, you can take things from other people, but if you got to, you got to refine it so that it's organic to who you are. And so, you know, you got to evolve, you got to be willing to learn. And I think once you kind of get set in your ways where, nope, this is how we're doing it, then I think the game is going to swallow you up. Now, I believe that there are things that you don't have to negotiate on. Like, I think every player has the choice to play hard. I think every player has the choice to compete. Those take no athletic, those are two things that take no athletic ability or talent whatsoever. You just got to choose that. So, you know, as far as effort and energy and things you can choose, you don't have to negotiate or drop your standards down. But I think being willing to learn and listen and admit that there's a better way, you know, I think probably, you know, for me, this, I'll give you an example. This past baseball season for me was probably the, you know, it was not fun. It was not a good year. I mean, we struggled and we had a lot of injuries to position players, a lot of freak stuff that really made it tough on us. But here's the thing. If I just said that our biggest, you know, if I just said, hey, this next year we're going to have guys healthy and a lot of those young guys are going to be older, then the truth is that I would have missed a lot of stuff. And, you know, the truth is that I didn't do a good job coaching that team. You know, I needed to make sure that I was getting back to some things that I do. I needed to change some things I do, because I had let it get to where, you know, it wasn't supposed to get. So you got to be willing to look at that, because if not, then, you know, if I had just said, well, we'll be healthy, it was a lot of injuries, then there's just a lot of glaring issues that can be fixed, that needed to be fixed, and we would have just glossed over that, and then you're not trying to move it in the right direction.
I think in an era where it's so easy to see guys that are leaving travel ball teams or transferring from high school teams or even from college teams, I think it's so easy for coaches, and you mentioned this earlier, to protect our ego and say, well, that was his problem. Thank goodness he left because that was his problem. When a lot of times it's going to fall back on us and what we're doing. I love the fact, Coop, that you open up the fact that you're willing to evaluate yourself in a way that, man, I have to be better. There's ways I could have been better. And obviously moving forward, I think that's a huge lesson for our coaches paying attention. Man, you've had so many great stops. And obviously we mentioned four stops with USA Baseball and obviously the successes you've had throughout your career. Walk us through the highs and the lows, the high moments that obviously still bring a smile to your face, but maybe the low moments and how you really got through those to move forward and be better.
Well, I mean, you know, my high moments maybe are a little bit different than others. I mean, yeah, look, I'm sitting in my office right now and I'm looking out on my wall. I've got two framed USA jerseys, one with a gold medal from when we won the gold, you know, the 18 and under team in 2013. Mm-hmm. We won the gold medal and, you know, coaching for USA Baseball is the highest honor I feel like you can have as a coach. I mean, when you represent your country and you're wearing your uniform, your USA uniform, and you hear the national anthem. I remember Mike Weathers told me this. Mike Weathers said, hey, when you hear it, it's going to sound different. And he was right. Mm-hmm. Like it was, you know, it's pretty emotional. And, you know, the type of kids that I got to coach on in that group and the sacrifices they made, like those are things like the USA ring that those guys won that I get a chance to wear every day. If you know, I'm going to take that to my grave. And so coaching with USA is something I'll never forget. Going, you know, winning a championship at Wright State and watching those kids take a program that was, you know, people laughed at to a program that people respected because they bought into it and they did it is something I'll never forget. But for me, the ones that I really, that I cherish and I hold close are, you know, like one of my former players at Wright State, him and his wife came to me and asked me to become ordained to marry them. That's something that I'll never be able to put a price tag on the honor that, you know, what that meant to be asked to be a part of that. Absolutely. I met my wife because of college baseball. You know, I mean, I went to Wake Forest. She was working at Wake Forest. We met there. You know, I've got two unbelievable kids because the journey college baseball has taken me on. And again, I go back to those guys like Paul Kermazzi and Jerry Weinstein at Sac City. And if they hadn't cared about me as a person, I wouldn't be sitting here on the phone talking to
that's
you right,
right
now.
So, right.
Those are the things that I hold closer to me than a win or anything like that. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love to win and I'm super competitive, but, You know, it's the relationships, it's the friendships, it's the memories like that. But again, I look at it, Journey of Baseball takes me to Wake Forest, and you know, I'm at the love of my life.
Any low moments you would uncover that that again, I think there's a learning piece there of how you got through them?
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, I've been fortunate in my career that, you know, I've never experienced a death in our program while I've been the head coach or anything like that. But you know, the low moments for me are losses. It's not a loss per se. It's like, you know, a lot of people might think, oh, you were in that, you know, you playing in that championship game and you lost. Well, yeah, that stinks. But really what stinks about it and what hurts about it for me isn't the fact that we lost and you sit there and you go, well, we lost and we didn't win. It was the fact that the finality of the season and those kids that I don't get a chance to be around anymore, like, it's not fun. Like, I tell our guys this all the time, and I know they think I'm crazy, but I hate senior days. Huh. I hate them because that means I don't get to coach those guys much longer.
Right.
And so, now I love it for those to acknowledge them and celebrate them, you know, or anything like that. It's just, again, I look at what these kids that I've been around as an assistant coach and as a head coach, what they've done for my family, how they've impacted my life, how they've impacted, you know, my kids. I mean, my two boys have grown up in a dugout, and they have so many brothers that, you know, to this day, they'll see, you know, on social media, Tyson and Jake, and they'll be, you know, they'll be all, hey, you know, way to go, Ty, way to go, Jake, or stuff like that. And it's just, so for me, that's the low moments, you know, knowing that I don't get, you know, you wish you could coach some of these guys forever. I mean, for example, one of my former players was at that concert in Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. And luckily him and his wife made it out of there. Okay. But thank God he did, you know, cause I can't imagine knowing that young man, what an awesome kid he is, what an awesome husband he's become. And, you know, his life in front of him to have it senselessly taken, just like all those people had their lives senselessly taken. You know, and that would have been far worse than anything I've ever experienced on a baseball field.
Here's something I go to that I think is tough for baseball lifers, guys that just, they see themselves in a uniform and stand in the box. Go back to, if you weren't coaching, Coop, what would you be doing?
Yeah, so, you know, when I first got out of high school, I wanted to be my high school coach. I wanted to be a high school teacher and a coach. Mm-hmm. Well, I let me back up. I wanted to play left field for the Boston Red Sox, and
right.
I still wish they'd call me, but I figured out about 3 weeks into junior college that was not going to happen. But
sure.
I wanted to be a history teacher. I wanted to be coach. I wanted to take over for Coach Calcano at El Camino High School, and then I got to junior college, and I loved the pace of the college game. I loved the teaching of it. I loved all about it, and so I kind of changed my major and went into education and everything. And but then I took a psych course and fell in love with it and got my degree at University of Miami in psychology. And, you know, I come from a family of educators. My mom was a school librarian and media technician. My dad was a college professor. My sister is a, you know, teacher in California, has been recognized as Teacher of the Year in California. I mean, and so I love helping. I love teaching. And I would want to probably be a therapist, somebody that, you know, I full disclosure, you know, I've suffered from severe depression before in my life and at a time where, you know, I was a young guy and I can't imagine, and I know our student athletes go through it. Like, I can't imagine what it would have been like as a player in junior college or Miami to handle that. Cause it was not easy to do as a young adult.
Sure.
So I'd want to be able to probably, you know, be a therapist and, you know, and work with people and help them, you know, get through some of their issues with depression or teach.
Gotcha. Is there any hobbies or anything that keep you busy outside the game, or any hidden talents maybe that you would offer our guys checking this out?
Well, I mean, hidden talents, no. I think my wife would really wish there were a few. You know, I'm pretty boring when it comes to that kind of stuff. Now, look, I like to, you know, when we do get a chance to travel, I like to experience things, but I like to be with my family. And like, I think like everybody else, like, do I like to golf? Sure. Do I like to fish? Sure. But when I do get a day off and I've got a bunch of hours, you know, I don't want to go on a golf course unless my family's with me. I don't want to go fishing unless I get a chance to hang out with my family. So I like to read. One thing that I do, I think that does allow me to relax is, I like to barbecue. I like to grill. So when I do get some time to, you know, be on the back porch and grill and then know that we're going to get together as a family and eat, like that's a real relaxing, cool thing for me.
That's awesome. As a guy that cracked his grill open last night, Coop, you ever make it to Greensboro? I've got you, my friend.
Hey man, I'm all in, but hey, if I come to Greensboro, we're going to Possibility.
Yes.
My friend, Cindy Issa, she's that's the place to go. So we'll do one night at Possibilities, the other night your backyard.
Don't think that I'm not going there and dropping your name either. That's gonna happen.
Well, look, if you really want good service, you better drop my wife's name. Say okay. Mo Lance Cooper, and they'll bring out everything for you.
Noted. Now open up this, because this is always great. Guys that have been around teams and dugouts and locker rooms on buses, give me some of the funniest stories that's happened to you over the years hanging out with your teams.
You know, I mean, there's so many, and sure, there's just different things you think about. But, you know, like, I remember one time when I was coaching at Sac City, and Fred Corral, who is the pitching coach at Missouri now, he was on our coaching staff. Great man of character, great pitching coach. But he's got a serious, like, devious, like, practical joke side. And so when I was at Sac City as a player, we used to always go down in January on a trip down to the, you know, Southern Cal and Cal Poly, and we'd play down there for a week and everything because there's no school. And so when I was back there coaching, we'd do the same thing. And so we're down there, and Freddie decides he's going to have some fun. Well, the California Lottery at the time is up around over $100 million. I mean, it's pretty big. And Freddie tells the guys, we gotta buy lottery tickets. Let's everybody put in a dollar or whatever, and we'll buy as many tickets as that. Whoever puts in, we'll buy as many tickets. And if we win, whoever put in, we'll split the winnings. And so, so a bunch of guys do, you know, probably about 70% of the team does. And then there's about 3% that don't. And so Freddie goes and he gets tick. He actually buys the tickets before the lottery's picked, but then he's drawn, and then he waits. And he waits till the numbers are drawn. Then he buys a ticket that has the same numbers that were just previously drawn, and he mixes it up inside there. And so he passes all the tickets out to the guys. All right, guys, I got the winning numbers right here in the newspaper or whatever. I can't remember how he had them. He's like, all right, here we go. Ready? I'm gonna give them out. And so he starts naming off the numbers. And one of the guys who's got the ticket that Freddie bought, you know, minutes after, like, Freddie, I got that. Freddie's like, come on, man, you don't have that. Like, stop. You know, he's totally playing into it. And he's like, no, I'm serious. Read him again. Freddie reads him again. He goes, no, I'm serious. I got it. And Freddie's like, give me that thing. And again, Freddie's playing it up. And finally, Freddie's like, you know, he's like shaking, like starts to shake, like, oh my God. And he's like, we won. And and they're all outside this. We're at a hotel, and they're all outside in the parking lot, and they're going nuts. They're celebrating. They're hugging each other. Guys are crying, and people are calling their parents to tell them, you know, that they're set. They won the lottery, that this and that. And you got then 30% of the guys that are like, it was just a dollar.
Yeah.
Like, all we had to do was get a dollar. And then he, like, slowly kind of, like, he's looking at the ticket, like he lets it go for a while, and he looks at the ticket, and he's like, wait a minute. This says it was purchased and the guys were like, and so finally he came out, like, it wasn't April Fool's, but he basically told him, hey, like, you know, you got God or whatever. And it was hilarious.
So, and like we talked, he's a future guest, so I'm going to certainly make sure he recounts this story. Do you think he did that knowing full well that was his intent, was to get the numbers after the fact and fool the guys?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah. That's exactly That's awesome. What he did. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, hey, look, if they had hit the lottery, that would have been – I don't know if he would have been more happy about winning the lottery or the fact that he pulled off the joke.
That's right. That's great. Can't wait to recount that with Freddie. Now, this, I love this question. You've mentioned so many great baseball men that have influenced you in your career. But if we had to pick three or four, we had to put those guys up on your Mount Rushmore, Coop, who are you going to throw up there?
Well, I think, you know, obviously I'm going to tell you Jerry Weinstein and Paul Karmazi, because of the impact they had on me, the stuff they taught me about baseball and life. And, Andy McKay, who I played with and was a coach at Sac City and director of player development, he's going to be on there. Rick Jones is going to be on there for me, because so much of what I do in my program I took from him. There's so many coaches that I could put on there. I mean, I never played for Tim Corbin, I think, but I look to what he's done for the game. And, you know, Ron Frazier, you know, these are guys that, you know, have taken, you know, Rod Dato, these guys, you know, Skip Bourbon, these guys have moved the game along. So the game's better for us right now. Wally Kincaid out in Southern California, never played for him. Yep. But that man coached guys like Dave Snow, Mike Weathers, Dave Serrano, George Horton, you know, Bill Mosiello. These are some of the best in this game were connected to that man. So, I'm a big fan of the people that came before us in this game and what they've done. And there's so many that I could name, but I would say those are just a few where people like that would be on there.
Before we sign off, Coop, I definitely want to make sure we empty out your pockets and we're looking at advice for coaches, guys that are just paying attention. What else haven't you dropped on that you think, man, could definitely set them off on a different path?
You know, I would say to you, I would say be really happy and content with where you're at. Mm-hmm. I think you asked me earlier something that I wish I could go back and do a better job of. I think, you know, one thing that I definitely could go back and do a better job of is, I wanted to be a head coach in the worst way. And there's nothing wrong with that. I think, you know, you guys should have drive and dreams and goals. But, you know, I remember Tim Corbin, listening to him talk and him saying, you know, that you have to really love where you're at and you need to do the best job you are there. And while I feel like I did that, I know there were times where I'm like, man, I just want to be a head coach. And when I get to do this and the truth is it's everything's going to happen in its own time. And it's also, if you just keep thinking about what might happen down the road or what you could possibly be doing, you know, you're going to miss out on so many unbelievable opportunities that you get every single day in this game and the people. And so I think number one for young coaches or, you know, just, if you take a job somewhere, make sure you're ready to take that job and be there for the rest of your life.
That's right.
Okay. Now that doesn't mean you have to be, obviously, but you know, understand that you're going to go there and you're going to work your tail off, and you're going to be loyal and you're going to really immerse yourself in that moment. You know, again, John Gordon wrote a book called Training Camp where he talks about using the telescope and the microscope. There's nothing wrong with having a dream or a goal or a destination in that telescope. But if you're not focused on the microscope and what you're doing right now in that day, then you're not going to get better at your craft. You're not going to become a better coach. You're not going to learn. And you're going to completely cheat the young man that you're coaching, because they're going to know that you don't really want to be there.
Just a powerful show, Coop. I mean, I cannot thank you enough for taking some time to jump on the call with us. We're certainly, from our perspective at ABCA, we're thankful that we have men like you inside our association. They're passionate about what we're doing. But more importantly, you're out there influence the next generation of baseball fans and baseball players. And so thanks for being on our calls from the Clubhouse Podcast, Coop. We obviously look forward to tracking you guys, and we hope to see you in Indianapolis.
Well, listen, I really appreciate it. I love what you guys are doing, and thanks for giving me the time. I mean, you could have had a million other better people on here, but I appreciate the time.
If you're asking what the very best part of this job is, it's easy. We can connect with exemplary baseball men and let them get their message out on the airways for all of us. That's exactly what it's all about. Great job, Coop. Thank you for your approach to coaching and developing young men. Love to hear his message for all of us paying attention, that we need to always challenge our thoughts and our philosophies, always evolve. And it's so great to hear Rob break down that for us inside the show. A guy that's still evaluating, seeking out a better way, a true lifelong learner. That's powerful stuff, Coop. Thanks again for being such a proud ABCA member. We're thankful you're out in our coach community, and we wish you and your staff and your players the very best coming into the spring. Now, we always talk about sharing this podcast with any and everybody you know in the game, even your players. And we love hearing your feedback on how these shows are hitting you guys on the other end of the call. So here are a few examples. Here's one from Steve Sawa, who coaches with the Indiana Elite, and Steve drops on us What a fantastic job that the ABCA does to build our knowledge on a daily basis. I bet I've learned more in the past 2 months listening to the podcast than I have in the past 2 years. Just a wealth of information at my fingertips, man. You're the best, Steve, man. Thanks for the note. Love to hear how this audio gold is helping you develop as a coach. Keep listening in. Or how about Matt Schramm, head coach at Council Rock High School North, who talks about how hooked he is on the podcast. These are huge on all levels. I can't always get to the conventions and clinics, but these podcasts are a great substitute. Absolutely, Matt. Always great to see guys in person. We'd love to have you come visit us in Indy, but we understand. But here's another way. You can still grow. You can still develop as a coach. And lastly, we heard from Philip Klusner, head coach at Bloomington High School, sends us a note that says the podcasts are out of this world. I'm a baseball junkie, and these podcasts are a perfect fix for my addiction to the game. Love that, Phil. That's great stuff. And for Steve and Matt and Philip, plus all of you guys listening in right now, remember, these are for you. You dive in and connect with these terrific baseball coaches. Learn from the very best. This podcast is your source for the best baseball information out there. And please keep sharing the show with your peers, your teams, your communities, and let's all keep working to grow the game of baseball together. If you want to, send them the link to iTunes. They can subscribe to it. It'll show up on their phone. You can send them the link to our website, abca.org/podcast. You can also make sure they're following us on Twitter at ABCA1945. If you're doing those things, they're going to find the podcast. We can keep reaching more coaches, players, and guys that want to learn about the game. Again, make sure you're following us on Twitter at ABCA1945. You can find me on there as well at CoachSheets3. You can always reach out to me directly by email, Sheets, S-H-E-E-T-S, at ABCA.org. Always great connecting with you guys. Please never hesitate to reach out. Try to help you out in any way that we can, but we love getting your feedback. Now, here's a few things we want to make sure you're aware of. Number one is our hashtag ABCA Chat. This is our platform that allows coaches from around the world to connect and share their thoughts on a variety of topics based on our podcast. So last week's show was on catching with Tom Griffin from Carson Newman. Absolutely flew off the shelves for anybody that was trying to get better at developing catchers. So tonight's ABCA Chat, if you're listening on October 17th, is going to be on catching. We're going to ask questions. Coaches are going to share their answers, but we're networking. We're connecting. It's awesome. And we want to see you jump in with us. So if you can't get to us tonight, mark down Tuesday, October 31st, Halloween, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You're going to go out and do your trick-or-treating early so you can get back and settle in for our hashtag ABCA chat. And we hope to see you check in on that with us. Plus, our Barnstormers Clinics tour keeps rolling this fall as we head out to the University of Kansas out in Lawrence and Creighton University in Omaha here in a couple weeks. We still got Lipscomb in Nashville. University of Memphis is on our docket. Plus, we're heading to Duke University and finally to the University of South Carolina to wrap up our tour for the fall. Come join us at the ballpark. These are our one-day coaching clinics from the very best teaching professionals in these areas as we're gearing up for Indianapolis this January. If you want more information, head over to our website, abca.org/clinics. and jump on the Barnstormers tour bus with us this fall. And lastly, keep in mind, this is the podcast for the American Baseball Coaches Association and the thousands of coaches we represent around the world. We want to see you jump on board and get inside our association, but we also want to make sure you're aware of our ABCA convention, our biggest event of the year, January 4th through the 7th in Indianapolis. So many great things are waiting for you there. We're planning for over 6,000 coaches to show up. The teaching clinics, the baseball trade show, the networking, the opportunity that's waiting for you there in Indy will be unlike any other place you can go. So if you wanted more information on that, go to abca.org, click on membership. You can scroll through all the benefits we offer our member coaches. You can also click on events and find out more information about our convention. We hope you're making plans to join us. But again, if you have any questions at all, never hesitate to reach out to us. We'll help you out any way that we can. And as always, coaches, thank you for listening in and staying dialed into our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast. And until next week, we ask you keep growing, you keep developing, you keep challenging yourself inside this game. We wish you and your club the very best, and thank you for what you're doing for the game of baseball.